This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Ow!
Look at her, a prisoner of the gutters. Condemned by every syllable she utters. By right, she should be taken out and hung for the cold-blooded murder of the English tongue.
Ow!
Oh, heavens, what a sound. This is what the British population calls an elementary education.
Hamza, I think you picked a poor example.
Did I? Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? This verbal class distinction by now should be antique. If you spoke as she does, sir, instead of the way you do, why, you might be selling flowers too.
I beg your pardon.
An Englishman's way of speaking, absolutely.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Shimela and Dash, who is sitting in for Arvin today. And we are going to be reviewing tomorrow a strange film, but one that is at its heart, at its genre heart, a musical. So that is going to be kicking off, or rather we are kicking off today, our whole week's lineup of musicals by going back to 1964 and one of the all-time greats, My Fair Lady.
I haven't rewatched My Fair Lady since I watched it, I think, as a teenager, you know, many, many times. And oh, what a lovely revisit it was, because I think that you pick up on so many new things when you watch it with a new lens. And I don't know, I think looking back at a film like this, and it's at a time like this where you just need a little bit of colour and joy and whimsy in your life, it was such a great watch. I'm particularly interested because Dash has never watched My Fair Lady before.
Yes, so so this was my first time watching, and as we were, you know, deciding what to watch and all of that, so we were just asking each other, you know, what musicals we like and all of that. And so I'm not even going to pretend here, right? I was talking to Sharmila and I said that, you know, if it's Mary Poppins and things, I like musicals, I really do, but like Mary Poppins, I couldn't stand and I cannot stand because there's a certain level of whimsy that Sharmila brought up.
You need to get out. I'm sorry. Like, I know
this is not how we start this.
Yeah. I recognize that you're doing us a favor, but, you know, please just no.
Yeah. Because there is a certain level of whimsy plus like sugar. You know, there's only a certain amount that I can take, you know, but I'm happy to say that I really, really enjoyed My Fair Lady. I thought it's a really good movie and you know, much needed joy, color. The songs were really, really nice. You know, it just left you feeling overall really pleasant.
You're back in under advisement. You're on probation. I think that I don't know whether there are that many people who are still really unfamiliar with the story of My Fair Lady, but it's a very, very simple story. It focuses on two main characters. So you have Professor Henry Higgins, who's a professor of phonetics, who takes under his wing Eliza Doolittle, who is a Cockney flower girl that he encounters one day. And he says that I can turn this, trodden cabbage leaf.
Gutter snipe.
Ragamuffin.
A whole load of words you can learn here that you can apply in real life.
So he says, I can turn this cabbage leaf into a princess, into anybody, just based on how she speaks. And thus starts off really the story's main plot, although it really also becomes about the relationship that develops between the two of them, the sort of push and pull, this idea of whether or not class is really the making of a person as well, or whether it's other more meaningful things. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And Henry Higgins, as played on stage and played in the film, is played by Rex Harrison. And Eliza Doolittle is Audrey Hepburn.
And this movie has a long history in its translation onto screen, right? Because it was originally a play by George Bernard Shaw, Pygmalion. That is in turn based on a whole slew of Greek myths, including Ovid and so on. And then it became a stage musical, which starred Rex Harrison with Julie Andrews. So when they cast Audrey Hepburn instead, because she was the bigger name for the screen version, there was a lot of controversy. One, because Audrey Hepburn can't sing, or rather can't sing well enough for this role. And of course, Julie Andrews had sort of pioneered the role in the stage version, and many people were very unhappy. But watching the film, I must say, and I've always thought this, I love Julie Andrews. I can't imagine anyone else playing this version of Eliza Doolittle, the version that you see in this film. Audrey Hepburn is so perfect in this role. And Rex Harrison is so perfect in his role. And the particular kind of magic that they both bring to these characters, I don't know, you don't get that kind of chemistry.
Yes, I think they have tremendous chemistry. And I mean, Audrey Hepburn, she's just fantastic, right? Her character is kind of, especially at the start when she is playing this, lower class person with a certain, she doesn't have the Queen's English accent, you know, as they say. So she's very exaggerated. She's loud, you know, she screams at your face without much poise and things like that. But even then, right, to make the character work, you need a certain sense of, I don't know, charm and gravitas, right? Because you cannot hate the character. You cannot dislike her. You can get perhaps a little bit annoyed with her antics, but you ultimately you still need to fall in love with her. And I think she just brought such a, you know, even when she was this loud person and all of that, she brought such a warmth and such a charm to it that really you just can't help falling in love with her. And, you know, Rex Harrison as Higgins, he also plays this, he plays this character which is pretty much, you know, he's comes off as a bit mean and rude and, you know, this old school alpha male type of character whose idea of teaching is not letting the student have any food until she gets it right and things like that. But even his character, you know, it's someone you need to like the character because of that relationship ultimately that both of them sort of develop, you know, they have a bit of, you don't know what's, they have a bit of chemistry there, some tension there, but, you know, it's not too on the nose with that, but you need to get the sense that both of them, despite them yelling at each other and throwing slippers at each other, they don't hate each other. Yes, literally. You know, there is a charm to Rex Harrison's character, and it's she's mean to her, but I think you like him because you slowly start to learn that he's equally mean to everyone. You know, including his best friends and all of that. And so you just, that's his personality. I think we all have that best friend who is just mean to everybody, but you know he's really good inside, perhaps.
So I think it's no surprise that Rex Harrison actually won Best Actor mm-hmm. for this role. And part of it, I think, and part of what you're talking about, Dash, is the fact that he has so clearly embodied it, right? I don't think that anyone else coming in. So the Henry Higgins character does not actually a lot of singing. He does more of the Jeremy Irons scar thing where he kind of speaks through the song. And in fact, he speaks through songs at a really rapid pace, right? The cadence is really quick. And I think that you can only kind of embody that so convincingly if you've really lived with it. And he has really lived in, bedded in this character. And in fact, I was really fascinated to find out that, and you can actually see it happening on screen, a lot of the songs were recorded and then dubbed in. So the performers were lip-syncing. And Rex Harrison actually refused to do that. So for a 1960s film to have to figure out how they were going to invisibly mic him in order for him to perform the songs the way he did, I think is kind of a testament in and of itself. But the main thing that I wanted to pick up on from what you're both saying is this idea of magic. And I know that classic Hollywood isn't for everybody. I know that, you know, for those of us raised perhaps without having seen a lot of it, they're quite odd now. The pacing is strange. They're very stagey. They're all on sets. It's a very particular flavor. But I really feel that My Fair Lady is a magical film. There's a lot of magic in it. Whether it's the chemistry, whether it's the fact that the music just works, whether it's the fact that the film is so lovely to look at, that all the sets just, even though they're theatrical, that's part of the charm.
I completely agree. And, you know, it's a kind of cinema that you don't get anymore. And I think watching it doesn't make you, so some old films, you're kind of like, I get why they don't do this anymore. Nobody wants to sit through a 2-hour monologue. But with My Fair Lady, you long for more films like this. The kind of attention given to the detail, the kind of staginess of some of the scenes, which just create a sort of larger than life, beautiful experience for you to watch. I mean, there are set piece after set pieces that kind of play with color and the way things look. So there's this great scene at the races when they debut Eliza for the first time to high society. And I don't remember being as impressed with the scene as a kid. Perhaps it's because it's really something you need to be an adult to appreciate, right? Because they stage this incredibly beautiful monochromatic scene of these upper class people. But you're also supposed to understand as an adult that it's not very much fun. They sing about it being fun, but it really isn't. And there's such a cleverness to the way all of this is brought to life. And there's so many aspects of things like that in this film. It made me miss that style of filmmaking.
Yeah, definitely. I think the theatrical aspect of it is probably one of the biggest selling points of it. Because, you know, even this is a film that a lot of scenes, I mean, it's grounded in reality for the most part, but, you know, it's a lot of scenes where you could have just gone to a street and shot it there, or, you know, but like a legit urban poor area and shot it there. But the way it's everything feels sets. It's really obvious. There's no pretending that this is the style that they were going for. You know, the way it looks like it's just props and people are playing around and walking around, even the streets and the people and the houses. Everything is so stagey in that sense. But that is why I think the film works, and even the way the characters act within these stagey sort of sets, I think it fits perfectly, because there is a tinge of theatrical kind of acting, right? I don't even know if it's a tinge. Perhaps that's, you know, it is more than a tinge of theatrical acting. There's a lot of like over-the-topness of it all and all. But I think it really works because that's the style they were going for, and it really plays into this idea of this old-school love letter to Hollywood.
So, love letter makes it sound like it was made today.
Well, I watched it yesterday, so.
Fair enough. We are talking today about 1964's My Fair Lady, a thoroughly loverly little film. Actually, it's not a little film. It's a huge film. And I think that that's something that we wanted to focus on after this, the idea of the scope of it all. But let us know, have you watched My Fair Lady? Have you rewatched My Fair Lady? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Build Fairer Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it. I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it. By George, she's got it. Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that soggy plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Bravo!
The rain in Spain stays mainly.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Dash. And today we are throwing it back to 1964 and My Fair Lady. So I wanted to talk a bit about the scope and ambition of the film, because at first glance, it's a very small thing. All of it rests on a wager. There's very low stakes in general. You know, nobody's really going to, no one's going to die. Cities aren't going to be destroyed. And yet, I think that it is that scope that allows it to get very personal. Because, of course, as Eliza starts to change and develop into this very fine, you could be a princess, you could marry anybody, says Henry Higgins. I think that she starts to have this very real fear of what's going to become of her. Where is she fit for? What's going to happen? And I actually really love that. Again, as a kid, I did not notice it. As a kid, all I saw was the getting married in the morning and, you know, all these fun songs and dances. But I think that there's actually a fair amount of existential crises in My Fair Lady.
Yes. And again, same for me. I didn't remember so much of these aspects. Even the way so much of the songs and so much of what everyone says is in a weird way double speak, right? Like I talked about the ascot earlier, but even the things Henry Higgins says, he has this famous song, which I remember, of course, because it's so funny, about why women can't be more like men. But actually, when he's performing the song, the joke is on him and the joke is on men who behave that way. Mm-hmm. And in that way, even this idea of class and where someone belongs. It's constantly interrogated in a way that is quite deep and makes a lot of commentary on what you might assume is a way to be or a better way to be versus what the truth of the matter is. And this time around, I think for me, there's very significantly a line, and I remember this line, but I didn't remember what an impact it makes in the film, where Eliza says the difference between a flower girl and a lady is not in how she behaves, but in how she's treated. And that's such a profound line. And I think that's actually at the heart of this film, how we treat each other and how that matters.
Yes. And I also think, like, I wonder how perhaps I would have seen this film, let's say if I watched it, you know, when I was a kid. Because I think on the surface, it can be seen as, you know, a typical rags to riches story, right, about this transformation. So it's essentially a, you can see it as like a sports film, but for language in a way, you know, like, okay, she needs to improve her language and then she becomes this lady. But at the same time, you know, if I think where I sort of had my sort of existential crisis with this film, and I think it's perhaps what the film is trying to comment on is our perception of language and how, you know, think about it. Okay, I'm just going to give, like, let's say myself as an example, you know, growing up, dark-skinned Indian guy, when you're walking down the street, people have a certain perception of you. But the moment they hear me speak, and they're like, oh, this guy speaks English. So their perception automatically changed. Like, they automatically assume that I'm better than the, you know, the people that don't. And I think that's what the film is trying to show as well. That, you know, I think that it really shows that just because this lady, she had a sort of a lower class accent, she didn't speak Queen's English, and, you know, everyone looked down on her and she wasn't. But all she did, like, is literally just improve the way, or like change the way she spoke, and suddenly she can go to, you know, these grand parties and fit in nicely. And that's not actually a good thing, because we are making assumptions and all these things about people, judging people's character just based on how they pronounce their words and all of that. And I thought that was a very interesting commentary that, you know, if you change your accent, you can change your class.
And all of that is very incisive and very much present in the film, but it's also wrapped in candy floss. I'm looking at the poster of the movie, and variously, depending on how you see it, it's always, it's pink, it's fluffy, or it's Audrey Hepburn's face front and center in a lovely, you know, white dress, very frilly. And all of it makes it look very beautiful, somewhat silly, very funny. And it is all of those things. I mean, it's a long film. It runs almost 3 hours. And it manages to, I think, be very delightful, very light, very deft, but it also achieves all those different things. And a lot of that comes back to, I think, the fact that it came from a play. So I know that people who have problems with musicals will say, why can't you just speak it? And I think that the thing is, if you were to try to convert the songs in the musical into conversations, you would add on 40 minutes to the film, because it achieves a lot. The songs are actually packing a lot of plot, a lot of characterization, and a lot of exchanges into essentially, you know, 2-minute songs.
If you take the song A Little Bit of Luck by Stanley Holloway, right?
And who also played the same role on stage.
Yes, and he's Alfred Doolittle. He's Eliza's father. And what a clever commentary on sort of that movement between classes and what the divides are, how cleverly that song encapsulates it. How do you capture that in a conversation? How do you capture that in just dialogue? So I do think that with My Fair Lady, the songs play such an important part, and they're beautiful. And I think, to borrow from Mary Poppins, a spoonful of sugar often does help the medicine go down. And with My Fair Lady, the medicine's actually really strong, but the sugar is wonderful.
Yes. And I want to touch on that as well. You know, this idea of what the songs can, like, how much of story can they pack in a song, right? Again, I know this is ridiculous, right? Going back to a sports, you know, sports movies and all that, when I'm talking about My Fair Lady. But it's, you know, when you see a boxing film, right? There is this sort of montage, training montage sort of thing. And here, that training montage essentially is the song, you know, The Rain in Spain. And I thought it was really, really, like, you know, wonderful, because, like, everybody starts singing and, like, she cannot pronounce it. And finally, when she's able to, And, you know, it's this big, exciting moment.
And you're all cheering with her.
Exactly. Mm. It's as if, you know, like, okay, now Rocky is going to go and he's going to win the fight. It's like, okay, you know, this girl, like this lady, now she's got it and she's transformed. And I thought the way they use those things, because if they really want, without songs, if they just want to go through her improvements, like bit by bit by bit, that's an extra, like Lynn said, 40 minutes right there. So I thought the songs, very beautiful, a lot of joy. Sometimes there's a lot of, you know, the scenes themselves may be serious, but the songs, you know, add a little bit of fluff. And so it's a very nice mix right there.
Going back to Audrey Hepburn's performance, right? I'm not sure I could have sat through 10 minutes straight of her going, "I," over and over
yes.
and over. You know, it's a lovely thing what they have in the film, but it's just about enough. You know, it's just right. I'm going to close off. I'm going to play what I imagine Arvind's role might be a little bit and ask whether we could ever imagine a remake, because this is something that comes up a lot when we talk about Hollywood, when we talk about films, particularly from the 40s to the 60s. I think we're seeing things like West Side Story getting remade, for instance. I never want to see My Fair Lady remade. I don't even think that it needs a modern update. A lot of the story and the politics within it, I think, are still completely relevant today, and just don't touch it. That's where I stand.
I 100% agree. I've tried watching My Fair Lady on stage and I can't stand it because of how much the movie is embedded in my head. So completely, please don't touch it.
Yes, don't touch it at all. I think it's a product of its time, but still works really well today. Nothing feels dated. The politics, everything, like, you know, the perception of language, like we brought up, all of that still applies today. There is absolutely no reason to remake it. Don't go anywhere near this movie's big Hollywood studio exec. Just stay away from it. We can rewatch what's already there.
We've been talking today about My Fair Lady and taking it back to 1964. It was directed, of course, by George Cukor, in case you were wondering what the Hollywood credentials on this thing are. And of course, it starred Rex Harrison, Audrey Hepburn. We'd like to know, I mean, do you love My Fair Lady? Have you watched it? Do you have a favorite song? Let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.